With all the talk about humans heading to Mars, what about traveling to the other planets? Are those distant places also potential tourist destinations? This week on Techonomics, host Jason Middleton takes a tour around the solar system with two authors, a rocket scientist and a science beat journalist, to explore just what life is like on other planets like Jupiter and Venus. Taking a summer vacation through the solar system, that conversation is now.
Hello, welcome back, and thanks for listening. It's the summer. That means summer travel. And there's one travel book that, regardless of your destination, is a stellar read for any flight, train, bus, or car ride, basically because it describes space travel. It's a beautiful, slick, colorful book that describes what you'd see if you could actually travel to the moon, or Jupiter, or one of Saturn's moons. And it's steeped in deep, accurate scientific research. Except its information is also made available to children. It's not a kid's book, per se, but it is appealing to all ages.
One thing that kind of changed my mind and my thinking about this was seeing how people envisioned space travel 100 years ago. They have these images of planes, biplanes, and people walking without spacesuits out in the open. And just to think how far we've come.
A Seattle newspaper reviewer wrote, it's a Rick Steves-style guide to outer space, with must-see vacation stops and scenic walk suggestions. Geeks, children, and spacey dreamers will get a clear and imaginative picture of the solar system, end quote. Rick Steves, of course, is a friend of the show. Okay, here's my somewhat giddy interview with the co-authors of A Vacation Guide to the Solar System.
I'm Olivia Koski. I'm head of operations at Gorilla Science.
And I'm Jana Grisovich. I'm an author, astronomer, and data scientist.
Thank you both for joining me today. I am excited to talk about this book, not only because it's beautiful and shiny on the cover, but it's so great all the way through. It's the Intergalactic Travel Bureau Vacation Guide to the Solar System. And it says in a nice little blurb, science for the savvy space traveler. And I think that's all coming quickly. But before we get into a little bit of the weeds on the science, and you both are very acclaimed scientists and scientific journalists, let's talk about the impetus for the book. How did you two come together to put this one on the shelves?
The Intergalactic Travel Bureau is this live experience put on by Gorilla Science, and it's a pop-up travel agency where anyone can come in and plan their vacation to outer space with astronomers. And so that's actually how Jana and I met. I was setting up the Intergalactic Travel Bureau for a festival here in New York, and I needed some astronomers, so she answered the call. She got a weird email.
I was basically procrastinating writing my PhD thesis, and I got a call whether I wanted to plan some space vacations, and how can you say no to that? So that's how I met Olivia and got involved with the Intergalactic Travel Bureau.
That's outstanding. And the book, I have to say, let's do some storytelling with our words, because visually it's gorgeous, and the graphics and some of the posters kind of remind me of early commercial air flight, maybe, you know, go to these exotic locations. Let's talk about the viability of space travel. Let's talk about the timeline that you guys see from what you're covering and what your expertise is. Can we dive into how SpaceX and
Jeff Bezos' Blue Origin.
Blue Origin, right. We're heading to space sooner than later, right?
Well, they all have big plans, and, you know, we haven't yet seen that private citizen take a suborbital flight like the ones that Richard Branson, Jeff Bezos are planning, but they all say 2018. So they're all hoping to send somebody to the edge of space in 2018, and Elon Musk of SpaceX also hopes to send somebody beyond Earth orbit to the moon and back in April 2018. So, you know, it could be next year, but you hear a lot of predictions like that, and the dates pretty often slip, but, you know, it's complicated. It's tough to send people to space.
And right.
So, yeah, but I think it's going to happen, you know, pretty soon, I think within our lifetimes. I mean, there's probably somebody that's been born today that will put their foot on Mars.
Well, my 8-year-old daughter hopes it's her. I can tell you that right now. And that's why she was so stoked for me to talk with you guys today. Okay, but you mentioned three billionaires there. It kind of reminds me back in the day, billionaires used to just get in hot air balloons and try to go around the world.
Absolutely.
Right? Yeah. And now we're looking at low Earth orbit.
Or if you even look at, you know, airplane travel, you know, airplane travel used to be only for the moneyed traveler. But now, you know, anybody can afford a plane ticket practically. And, you know, the rocket ship travel will be like that. So someday.
Yeah, and as a scientist, like, I'm naturally skeptical of things, but one thing that kind of changed my mind and my thinking about this was seeing how people envisioned space travel 100 years ago. And, you know, they have these images of planes, biplanes, and people walking without spacesuits out in the open. And just to think how far we've come in terms of our ability to travel in space in that 100 years, who knows where we'll be 100 years now.
Like I mentioned, you're both scientists and scientific journalists, and you've got this wonderful book. And I don't usually go by the pre-press that they send me, but on this one, it kind of makes sense. What did surprise you when you were researching this book? If you both have like 1-2-inch headline that was kind of like, oh, well, okay, maybe 2018 is viable or something like that.
What really surprised me was learning about the possibility of humans traveling to Venus. So we hear a lot about Mars, and it is in some sense a logical next step after the moon. But Venus, while the surface is super hot, very high pressure, in the upper atmosphere, it's really quite similar to Earth. The temperature is similar to Earth. Pressure is fine. There are some sulfuric acid clouds, so there's some engineering challenges to deal with. But it's much more viable than I originally thought, and I found that very surprising.
That is cool. And what was your takeaway?
Well, for me, we were trying to answer this very simple question of like, oh, when should I leave for my trip to Jupiter or Pluto or Saturn? And answering that question is tough. You know, you're going on a trip to France. France isn't moving. Like, you know where it's going to be. And it's pretty easy to schedule a trip to France because you don't have to take into account where it's going to be in 12 hours when you get there. But with visiting other planets, you have to take into account their positions and their orbit around the sun, the Earth's position and its orbit around the sun. You know, these vacation destinations are moving targets, and so you almost have to have a PhD in orbital mechanics to plan your trip and to schedule it properly.
Yeah, the only higher math I had to do was when I asked British Airways how much the upgrade to business was, and then I freaked out.
Exactly.
Yeah, right. Okay, I'm looking at the brochure that comes with the book in front of me. You have a listing for Venus, and some of the data includes day length, maybe the travel time. It's 100 Earth days for a flyby from Earth to Venus, for example. The temperature on the surface, 867 degrees Fahrenheit. Was there one of these that kind of stood out for you a little bit? I know that sounds a little bit cheeky, but at the same time, I'm hoping one of you says Jupiter, but we'll get to that eventually. But was there one that was like, okay, in the fantasy world, this is the one I would go to first?
Well, in terms of where I would want to go, I would definitely want to go to Saturn, and in particular, a moon of Saturn called Titan. It's just completely fascinating. It has seas on it. They're not seas of water. It's made of methane and ethane, so sort of like natural gas. And then it's got this beautiful orange haze and a thick, thick atmosphere, which is really unusual for a moon. You could actually fly under your own power with a little bit of help on this moon, which would be an amazing experience, right?
Totally.
To fly around. You could see it has dunes that encircle its equator, so it's really a fascinating place. Plus, you'd get to see the rings of Saturn, so there's that plus as well.
Man, that sounds like a Blade Runner line, you know, at the end of the Blade Runner, and he says, I've seen attack ships on fire off the shoulder of Orion, and you're like, wow, I don't even know what that means. It's a string of words. What was your favorite?
Well, I personally would love to go to Jupiter and see the great red spot up close. And one thing about Jupiter that's awesome is its moons. It has more than 60 moons. I think Jana said 67 earlier. It's just got all kinds of different worlds that you've never seen anything the likes of on Earth. There's a moon called Io, which is covered in volcanoes. And then another moon next to Io is Europa, which is covered in ice. And so there's just the most extreme environments that you could ever imagine circling Jupiter. And I'd really love to go to Europa, the ice moon, and drill down through the ice and explore the ocean beneath, because they think that there's a water ocean there and potentially, you know, it could support life.
I'm glad you guys made this book, because if we keep doing this whole climate denial thing here on this planet, we're going to have to get extraplanetary pretty quick, right?
One thing in researching this guide is, like, the other planets are so difficult for humans to survive on. Like, the sheer lengths that you have to go through to keep a human alive in space en route, and then when you get there, you know, I don't want people to make the mistake of thinking of Mars as a backup planet, because it's not realistic.
Right.
Yeah, I think we really have grown to appreciate the Earth more than ever when you kind of think about what it takes to survive on other planets, which we gloss over a lot in the book because we focus more on, you know, what you'll see when you get there. Mm-hmm. But it's tough to stay alive in space.
Before I let you go, I wonder, is there any kind of like multimedia aspect to this? Can we get digital? Yeah. Can we take it on our iPhones?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can take a trip to the moon right now if you have an iPhone. We have a virtual reality app that you can download. And if you go to intergalactictravelbureau.com, you can download the app. And if you can get a VR viewer, like a cardboard viewer, mm-hmm. put your phone in it and take a trip to the moon.
I am going to do that today. I'm not joking. I am doing it as soon as I get home. I love this book. Again, thank you both for your time so much. And when we have a more serious topic and some more scientific stuff, I hope we can circle back and speak with you again.
We'd love that.
Thanks so much.
That was Olivia Koski. She is head of operations at Gorilla Science, and Dr. Jane Gersovich. She has worked as an astronomer and science educator at the American Museum of Natural History. They co-authored one of our favorite summer travel books titled A Vacation Guide to the Solar System. And that app they mention, it's awesome, by the way. Great visuals, and all you need is an iPhone and a Google Cardboard. Just search Space Vacation in the App Store. For links to this segment and all our segments, actually, please go to kgoradio.com/techonomics, or you can check us out at facebook.com/techonomicsradio. I'm Jason Middleton, and this is Techonomics.